No, I was going to say, yeah, he got me reading Steele's thing on fascism. And the mystery
of
fascism.
Just been talking about the previous one we did, which has been received in a very good spirit, particularly by Ray Scott Percival, one of whose books we mentioned. So it's I'm very happy
good.
About that.
Good. I wonder how he heard about it, actually.
I don't know.
Maybe through the Great Balance.
Maybe he just Googles himself every now and again, or Googles for the book every now and again. That would make sense.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, well, we'll make a start in that case.
It's Friday the 13th of August, isn't it?
Yeah.
2021.
And I'm Patrick Crozier.
Brian Micklethwaite.
And we're going to talk about Northern Ireland.
Mm.
The reasoning being that I perhaps know a bit more about this than you do.
Yeah, I don't want to be the one doing the agenda all the time. Mm. It seems very unbalanced. And I've often felt guilty about not thinking about Ireland and not understanding it and not really caring about it. It's, you know, it's a faraway place. It's the opposite end of the British Isles from southern England, where I've spent all my life. And, you know, the Irish are the Irish. What can you do? I'm not proud of that. I'm just saying that's how right. That's been my feeling about it. But you grew up in Northern Ireland, didn't you?
Well, I didn't, actually.
Oh, you didn't?
I've lived in England all my life.
Hmm.
My mother, however, grew up in Ireland. And my family were sort of based in a place called Monaghan, which is 15 miles southeast and west of the border, because the border does funny things in that area. And they're Protestants, so they are Southern Protestants, which is a fairly rare thing. I mean, not...
So almost all the Protestants are now in Ulster, are they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they were before. I mean, that was the majority 100 years ago.
That hence partition where it was. Yes.
Yeah, more or less. More or less. We can talk about exactly where they drew the line and all that sort of thing. And I would sort of visit there at least once a year, see my grandmother and other relatives, and I have relatives both sides of the border. So that's why I care about the place. Well, it's also a very friendly place, and it's certainly for a. Well, I was going to say a townie like me, but it was certainly I'm sure it was part of the attraction. Was it so rural? And you get out and you see farms and tractors and.
Well,
stuff
I had
like that.
I had when I was small. I had a grandmother who lived in Monmouthshire, which is semi-Welsh.
It's really semi-Welsh, isn't it? I looked it up on Wikipedia and discovered that until very recently, it was not officially part of Wales.
That's right. Wales and Monmouthshire, but the fact that they were in the habit of putting Monmouthshire into attaching it to Wales verbally tells you that there's something going on there. You know.
Mm.
The only relevance of that is that it's amazing how much you kind of absorb without trying about a particular national circumstance if you happen to have family connected to it. I know a bit more about Wales than the average English person does. And so I'm interested in learning about Ireland from you, because you obviously know much more about it than I do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, the odd thing...
You later became a sort of partisan unionist political creature, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I did, and that was...
How did you get into that?
That's a very good question. And I think a lot of it was... I will regret saying this, probably peer pressure. Because I was not initially a unionist at all. Indeed, I had some... I regret to say in my youth had some Republican sympathies. It wasn't until I became a Conservative, member of the Conservative Party, and later a Libertarian, that I started to become a Unionist. I mean, it wouldn't be in theoretically a difficult thing for me, because as I said, I have, relatives both sides of the border. Yes, I suppose it's because I think it's true of a lot of libertarians. They find that they you feel as if you're fighting against a tidal wave.
Mm.
That you're against a sort of received opinion,
mm.
and you start to doubt all received opinion.
I see.
And I think you start reading and studying and looking things up, and then you find the story is not the story you thought it was. Mm. I mean, for instance, even something like for years and years I've been told that before the trouble started in 1969, Catholics had been terribly discriminated against in housing and jobs. Well, you discover that the only academic survey of these things revealed actually, there might have been some, but it was very, very small.
Mm.
Well, everywhere, it was certainly not systematic and certainly not obvious. And certainly under certain circumstances, Protestants could be worse off than Catholics. And the other thing you learn is that that very use of religious terms, totally and utterly inaccurate and misleading.
How misleading? In what way?
Well, the dispute is not about religion.
Yeah.
It is about, and this is true, I mean, give the main organisations, the IRA, Irish Republican Army, and the Ulster Unionist Party, their credit. They do not use religious terms in their mm. names, because it's about nations, states, and borders. Mm. And the dispute principally is over where the border should be between the Republic of Ireland and the United Kingdom. Mm. And in that sense, there's nothing particularly complicated about it. It's like a whole bunch of disputes around the world, whether it be in the Basque Country or the Balkans or the Middle East. Mm. Well, it was slightly more genocidal in parts of the Middle East. But
well, yeah, I see, yes. So you then got a job with a unionist MP, didn't you?
Yes, a chap called David Trimble.
Yeah.
Now Lord Trimble.
Mm.
Nobel Peace Prize winner.
And what was his attitude to all this?
He was a pretty much straight down the line unionist.
Which means determined to maintain Northern Ireland as part of the UK.
Mm. Yes.
No plans to reabsorb the Republic.
No. although a unionist MP did once put it to me that Monaghan, what I regard as my home county, ought to be part of the mm. United Kingdom. I wasn't keen on that idea. Mm. I think I was very glad my family was where it was during the Troubles. It could have been really quite nasty.
My experience of these sorts of troubles is that if you're in a tiny minority, you're pretty safe.
Yes.
Because there's nobody fears you.
Mm, exactly. That's half my notes gone now. Yeah, sorry about that.
Because I lived in a basically all-white suburban sort of semi-suburb, semi-village of London, and there was one Asian family.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
That I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they had a different slant on it, but we certainly never felt any grief towards them.
No. Because, as you say, they cannot be any sort of threat.
Hmm.
But you get the numbers up to sort of 40, 60.
Hmm.
Yes. Under normal circumstances, I can't think of any situation in which that sort of proportion doesn't cause problems.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, you've got problems, and often those problems can be very violent.
Hmm.
And that's the situation with Ulster. And I was sort of thinking of some other examples of these sorts of invasions in British history. I mean, the Normans is a good example. And I believe that just their problem was there just wasn't enough of them.
Mm.
So, they could be in charge, but soon enough they had to start marrying. They had to marry the local, what was left of the Anglo-Saxon aristocracy, and gradually...
They ended up talking a distinct language and becoming quite unlike their French ancestors.
Exactly. I believe the the turning point was the Hundred Years' War.
Mm.
And that's when we got things like the English flag and English became the official language.
Mm.
So, yeah. But in the case of Northern Ireland, of course, the proportions have always been, you know, roughly equal.
Mm.
Maybe 2-1. That's
in Wales, there's a distinct language. And I'm convinced, if only because it makes sense, that a lot of Welsh people are frightened of Welsh independence because you would have one of these balanced divisions between about half the people speaking Welsh and the other half not.
I mean, I thought it was a regional thing. I mean, the Welsh language is much more spoken up north.
Yes. But I think lots of Welsh people fear what might be the internal politics of an independent Wales.
Right.
Because of the... Not in spite of having their own language, but because of having their own language. Now, in Ireland, are there any languages other than English that are...
There is serious? Gaelic.
Yes. How many people speak Gaelic in Ireland as a whole?
On a day-to-day basis, I don't know the numbers. I'd be surprised if it were more than 100,000 out of a population of 5 million or thereabouts.
So you're talking borderline unimportant as a potential divisive force?
Absolutely of no importance at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it is divisive in Ulster because it is a way that...
But the reason it's divisive is it feeds into a bigger and much more serious division.
Yes, it's a means by which Republicans can humiliate Unionists. That's the point about it.
Yeah.
But in the South, it's... I mean, I have heard it spoken.
Yeah.
On one occasion, I was on a bus and I heard it spoken behind me. I was very surprised.
Mm.
But that's it, and it's... Other than that, you hardly ever hear it. I mean, it's heavily promoted. Still, but it's one of these things that's not so much honoured in the breach and the observance, you know, they can't get any traction with it, despite their efforts. I think there may still be an Irish language qualification for the Irish civil service. There might be.
Really?
I think there is, but I don't think any of them use it.
And are there lots of bilingual signposts and things like that?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, your signpost will have English at top and on top and Irish at the bottom. I think that's where, or the Irish is certainly a smaller case.
Hmm.
Yeah, that exists.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And the effect of the signpost in Wales is to remind everyone that if Wales was a separate nation, all hell would break loose. I have no knowledge of the matter, but I... It makes sense to me that if you were Welsh and you wanted a civilised life, you'd be a Unionist with England.
Yeah.
For that reason alone.
I mean, what? So you think there is a potential for a civil war in
Wales?
In Wales.
Well, I think the locals see it and they get away from it.
Yeah. But, I mean, the South Welsh don't feel different from the North Welsh, do they?
I think when... Political people get their claws into a language difference. They can do all sorts of bad things with it. Look what happened in the Balkans.
I thought the point is that everyone in Yugoslavia spoke the same language.
Oh, do they?
I think it's Serbo-Croat, isn't it?
Oh, it shows you, isn't it?
I mean, the only difference in Serbia is that some of the signs are in Cyrillic, if I remember correctly.
Hmm.
I believe Slovene is a slightly different language. I'll have to look that one up.
In Spain, they have difficulties because of Catalonia.
Yes, but it's not... I mean, language is part of it.
Mm.
I think in the same way that religion is part of it in Ulster, but it's... Mm. I think it's more a way of just... Well, I think, you know, Catalans speak Catalan. Mm. And I think it's one... Certainly in Catalonia, it's one of these things where they feel the need to exercise that right to speak Catalan because under Franco, it was banned to write it, I think. And I think for a while, even you weren't allowed to talk it, speak it. So there's an element. But I think the Catalan nation and the Basque nation precede any sense of, you know, that sort of antagonism with central Spain, I think, goes back just because they're different nations, not because they speak different languages particularly. Are there examples in Britain? Well, I mean, I was going to say the Irish, actually, because the Irish did speak Gaelic for a long time until about the 19th century. And
did they?
Yeah, and then they all started speaking English.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I don't know.
I must check that one up.
I didn't know if it was the other thing either. You know, I just didn't know. Never thought about it. That shows you how deeply ignorant I am of Irish matters. You were saying before we switched this machine on that your views have softened somewhat.
Yeah.
In what sense is that?
Oh, I think when I was a researcher, I was a very, very partisan, and you know, unionists could do no wrong and nationalists could do no right.
Mm.
It's softened in the sense I just feel that if you have that situation where you have these roughly equal populations and they don't see eye to eye, well, you're doomed, really. You're going to have conflict, and there's not much you can do about it. I mean, you can't readily convert Britons into Irishmen or Irishmen into Britons.
Mm.
And I say that, and then I think about Irish immigration into England, which, by and large, you know, one generation and they're done. They're as English as anyone else.
Mm. Well, look at you.
Well, of course, we're unionist British, so my mother would not have felt she was moving to a foreign country.
Yes.
No, no sense.
But yes, your point is taken that there are lots of Irish people in England who don't cause it. There's no problem.
No, not at all. Not at all. The exception to that rule is... I got slagged off on San Jose for saying exception to the rule. But the one difference is, of course, Glasgow.
Yes.
Yes, where this really matters and has mattered for... matters since at least the 1880s and probably before then. Whereas you compare Glasgow with Liverpool, yes, Liverpool has a large Catholic population, but to the best of my knowledge, there isn't very much sectarianism in Liverpool, or certainly not on anything like the extent that you have in Glasgow, where your football team is.
Mm. Rangers and Celtic.
Yeah, your nationality, yeah.
Mm.
So I can only imagine it's simply because there just weren't enough Irishmen coming to England at any one stage to become a sort of self-conscious minority.
Yeah. The logic for the individual was to learn as much as he could about the local setup.
Yeah.
The language, everything. Change his accent, maybe.
I think the crucial thing is what happens... Well, I say crucial. Maybe not crucial, but... I think it's what happens in the second generation.
Mm.
I think that's when people have to make decisions about what they are.
Mm.
And if you're an entirely English town, I mean, first of all, if you've come from a mixed family, which is half English, well, you're going to be English.
Mm.
You're going to be English under almost any circumstances.
It is striking how completely the English demographic is bigger than all the Celtic.
Yeah, yeah.
Within the UK, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
What's the population of the Republic of Ireland?
I think it's about 4 million.
Yeah, that's not much at all.
No, I mean, it's half London.
Yeah.
I think Scotland is about the same. I think Wales is maybe 3, maybe 3.5.
Yeah.
And Ulster would be 1.5 million. So that's those numbers. Yeah, they're tiny in comparison with England, which is... Yeah. I understand they discovered the other day that when they were expecting 3 million people to apply for the sort of EU residence permit, 6 million did. So who knows how many people live in England?
What, these are EU citizens who want a residence permit in the UK?
Yeah. So, yes, how did England get like that? It is actually remarkable, given that if you look at the geography.
Yeah.
Is England even half the British Isles? I don't think it is, so I should look that one up.
Scotland's a pretty big place, isn't it?
Lots of mountains.
Yeah, but I mean, it takes another half a day to get to the top of it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Ireland does not have a lot of mountains. I know this because I've been round it.
Mm.
There's a few hills, yes, lots of bogs, which are quite quickly being drained and dug out for turf. Well, of course, Ireland did have a much larger population before the famine.
Yes.
I think it was about 7 million then.
Really? Yes. Yeah. Yes, the Irish diaspora around the world, especially in America.
Yeah.
But also Australia, I believe.
Yes, so I understand. Yeah. It's a big part of their politics. I mean, I understand that for instance, the Australian Labour Party is a much more libertarian party than you might think, because the Irish minority will not vote Liberal National Liberal. They will vote. They can often be quite libertarian and will only vote Labour, so Labour gets influenced by this sort of slight libertarian bias, shall we say.
So you become a bit more sort of resigned to trouble in Ireland, just carrying on a bit.
I can't imagine this is the end of it. I'm sure there is a desire to believe that it's all over. I was very puzzled, I must confess. I was very surprised that peace stuck after the Good Friday Agreement of 1998, because I thought with the concessions that were being made to the Republicans, it was only a matter... I mean, they would just, you know, bank those concessions and then demand some more. You know, with the
it's always felt to me like an inevitable future that Ireland would eventually be a single nation.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's rather like Brexit. Can you imagine us going back? I can imagine, I know, I mean, there are lots of people who now want to reverse Brexit, but would they be able to? I don't think the Europeans would tolerate it. And I think if Ireland went independent, I think the unionists who wanted to get back into the UK would be talking to themselves. I don't think the English would have any time for it. Maybe in Scotland they would.
Possibly in Scotland, yes. Where there's a... I believe there's still quite a strong Orange Order. No, I think... I suspect a lot of the feeling would be good riddance. I mean, that grieves me to...
I know.
...to think that.
It's not a feeling I'm proud of, as I say, but it's, you know, get it sorted, settled, and get along with them from then on.
Yeah, yeah.
Try and get rid of these 60-40.
No, well, I mean, there is actually another way of doing that. If you look at an electoral map of Ulster, you will discover that most of the nationalist seats are on the west of the province, most of the unionist seats are on the east of the province. It would be a fairly easy thing to draw a line along the River Bann, which is about in the middle, and say, okay, everything to the west, you know, we forget about, and everything to the east, we stick with. After that, you could get rid of South Armagh, which is all nationalist, parts of South Down. If it were up to me, I'd put a big wire fence around West Belfast and see what deal they are prepared to make with us. But yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that the point is that, you know, making it more like 90 to 10 or 9 to 1 would, yeah, massively improve.
Would short
things.
It, yes.
Yeah.
The world is now ruled by people who are extremely reluctant to make these sort of rearrangements.
Yes, yes.
Because I think their feeling is, you do this, there are lots of places like this where the same demands will then become
And
more
maybe
loud.
They should be acceded to, is my opinion on this matter.
Yes.
I mean, I can understand the Spanish feeling, because I'm sure they think, well, you know, if we allow the Basque country its independence, well, next it'll be the Catalans, and then it'll be the Galicians, and then, who knows, it might even be the Andalusians, and, you know, there might be some ancient dispute with Portugal that might come into this, and very quickly, we're going to be much smaller, and we won't have a coastline.
So balkanised.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting expression, balkanized, isn't it? What is the difference between being balkanized and being Swissicized?
Yes.
If that's a word.
Yes.
I mean, here we have Switzerland, where we have two big language groups, the French and the Germans, one much smaller, well, one's a lot smaller, the Italian, and one even smaller than that, the Romansh, I think they're called.
Mm.
And we have the richest country on earth.
Well, that helps, doesn't it?
Well,
that last bit.
Yeah.
I mean, the basis of the UK and the U bit was the empire and the fact that Britain was an economic superpower for a long time.
Isn't it slightly the other way around, in that the empire came after the Union, didn't it?
Yes, but it was... The feeling was, I think, among a lot of Scots, especially Lowland Scots, that joining England was a smart move.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it has that flavour anymore.
Have you heard of it? Are you aware of the Darien scheme?
I think I am.
Right.
That was when they bankrupted themselves. And
yes, yes. With their little colony in Central America.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought the English are better at this colonisation business.
Yeah, well, the Scots contributed hugely to the empire, didn't they?
I've certainly heard that said many times, so. I will believe that to be true.
Mm.
Yeah,
and we've already discussed how the Irish joined in the First World War.
That is a slightly different story.
Yes. The Second World War is a rather different story, isn't it?
Well, it's a disgraceful story. I'm not Ulster history. Ulster has got a lot to be proud of.
Yes.
And the Battle
of the Atlantic was a lot harder.
Yeah.
Because there were no west of Ireland.
I mean, Ulstermen will still say that Dublin kept the lights on so the Luftwaffe could bomb Belfast.
Hmm.
So that comes up. And obviously, I mean, but it has to be said, there were lots of Irishmen who deserted the Irish armed forces, Irish army, and joined the British army.
Yes.
So that did happen.
Mm.
And they were treated abysmally.
Mm.
And there's that incident where, when Hitler killed himself, Eamon de Valera, the President of Ireland, or was he Prime Minister? I can't remember, he was Prime Minister, went round to the German embassy to sign the Book of Condolences.
Wow.
Yeah. Indeed.
Didn't know that.
Indeed. Yes, I'll have to check up on that one. But I'm quite sure that's...
But that's the sort of... That you even think that's probably true is quite telling, isn't it?
I am very sure, 95
yeah.
plus
yeah.
percent sure that's true.
But even lies that get around are tell you something, don't they? You know, they reveal a state of mind. And the one about the, you know, they kept the lights on, that's... A sort of has a kind of mythic quality to
it. Yeah, it does.
But the fact that people said that.
Well, I think this is very typical about these sorts of national ethnic disputes, that people will believe almost anything about the other side, and they cannot be persuaded of their goodwill or anything like that. There's a quote I found in I can't find it now. It's by Father Dennis Fall, and he said exactly that, and it was. You know, it doesn't matter what facts you present to his own side, but it could equally work the other way, is they will never believe anything good about the other side.
The other fellows, yes.
Yeah. And that is why these things get so bitter and last for so long.
I think the reason why the English, especially the south of England, London and that, you know, the home counties, are so indifferent to the Irish question is that, by and large, our experience of Irish people is very good. Terry Wogan, you know.
Yeah.
Lots of Irish people all over our TVs doing a good job entertaining us. Now it's Daro Brian or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
The only annoying thing about him is you can't say what his name is by looking at it on the page. It's hard to pronounce, but apart from that, he's fine, you know.
And the many Irishmen that many of us will have met
in the
course of our jobs.
Yes,
and,
of course.
Other things. So, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So... Clearly, it's possible to get along with each other. So why can't we?
Yeah.
You know.
And my explanation is, as we said before, it's just, it's a numbers game. You get those numbers to roughly equal, as you say. People see the threat, and then it's all over. And then at that point, it's all over. You, there's nothing you can do, I think.
Well, I heard a TV interview on the net yesterday. Somebody called Ed Hussein, who's been wandering around mosques in England, and he's pretty much saying the same thing. We're getting to that point of no return in lots of places in England.
Yes.
And if we ever get anywhere near the point of no return in England itself, God help us.
Well, we're going to have to be brutal about it.
Well, that's what he says, actually.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Going to have to say to if you cannot fit in with England as was, well, maybe it's not your country. Get out. Go somewhere else. Pick another
one. Who is this guy, Ed Hussein?
Ed Hussein.
I think I've heard the name.
He wrote a thing called something about infidels or something. He was
a Muslim. He was a Muslim terrorist, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yes, right, okay.
And he wrote a book about why he turned over a new leaf. And he's now, like a lot of converts, he's become more orthodox than the orthodoxy, you know.
Don't you mean the other way around? He's become more English than the English sort of
thing? Yeah, that sort of thing. Okay. That's what I mean, yeah. Sorry, I didn't say it well. But yes, I meant that.
And he's... I mean, if I were God in this regard, my view would be, well, there are certain parts of England we're just going to have to concede that aren't part of England, have to be regarded as foreign territory. And, you know, you get out the barbed wire and the fences.
I think Hussein's feeling is that's a solution worse than the problem. The better answer is to win. Reverse it.
Right, okay. But I mean, I have given some thought to that, and I'm not quite sure. Please shoot this down in flames. Is that the government, and I don't like saying the government, because as a libertarian, you don't think the government is the solution to anything. The government simply imposes a reformed Quran on people. So, yeah, you can be Muslim, but this is the Quran you're going to believe in. If you don't believe in that, we regard you as a...
an unwelcome foreigner.
Well, a traitor. And of course, there are so many who are second generation, we can't call them foreigners anymore. Even though I think very few of them would regard themselves as British. So he says win. What does he regard as winning? Does that mean eliminate Islam?
Confront the Muslim population in Britain with the statement, either assimilate and get along with us, follow our values, you know, none of this beating up your wife and jihad and all this nonsense, or get out.
Does he think that's possible for people to do that and still be Muslims? Because that's the problem.
He seems to think it is possible. He's a Muslim, I think.
I mean, we both read Innes Bowen's book about Islam. And that's a very clever book. Because it's not polemical. But it does, you know, reading through the lines, between the lines, it does make the point that there's no nice version of Islam. And that's the really depressing thing.
Yeah.
And I think it dovetails with everything else I know about Islam.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, I think I just don't see how Ed Hussein can think this. He's wrong, if that's my understanding of what it is. Where did he... is this a TV programme he did?
No, it was an internet interview. Okay. I'll try and dig out the link if I can.
I don't promise to,
because I watched it and then scrubbed it.
Was it on YouTube?
Yes.
Well, good chance it'll still be there, so I'll have a look at it. Now, I was having a chat with an old friend... beginning of this week, and he was basically saying, you know, it's all over. We don't seem to have the stomach for the fight. So,
A critical thing that might change is that if it becomes clear that we're going to start living in a divided country, lots of English people will start making a fuss, not have enough stomach for them.
Yeah,
you know, there'll be lots of English who say we must accept this, but also. There may be lots of sort of cultural Muslims, not religious Muslims, not strongly religious, who say, no, we want to be British. Because after all, they came here because this is a safer country.
It's a safer country, it's a richer country, you can get on.
Yeah.
You speak to Muslims, and there's always the other country they've been known, and it's always full of corruption.
Yeah.
Yeah, like getting to the airport. You've got to pay money to get your baggage through the security. You've got
Yeah.
This sort of thing. Pay money to get through passport control.
Yes. Or worse.
Yeah. Yeah. And they deeply resent that sort of thing.
Mm. And it might be that there are enough people within the Muslim community by the time the crunch arrives to say, we're not happy with, we don't want this.
Mm.
And they'll turn on their, that's always struck me as the vital thing, whether anyone in the Muslim world is prepared to stand up for British values. And I think it might happen. It just might.
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
It would. It'd be nice. It's another of these, I wish we're, I hope we're right, I fear we're not things.
I mean, my problem there, I mean, even if it did happen, you would still have a possible skin colour conflict, ethnic conflict.
Well, you know, I think one of the reasons Muslims get so angry about Indians is that the Indians destroy that, they blur that line.
Oh,
by being black. You know, the Indians get mistaken for Muslims often.
Mm, yeah.
By ignorant white people. And that blurs the lines, doesn't it? When you look like a Muslim, but you're not. That's the important thing, isn't it? I mean, when you see a westernised coloured bloke, you don't know what his background is automatically, do you?
No, he could be Afro-Caribbean, he could be African. Yeah.
Could be all sorts of things. So in other words, the colour thing wouldn't be fatal necessarily.
I'm not sure I would like to live in an England where 40% of the population was black.
Mm.
I think that is for the same reasons as in Northern Ireland is asking for trouble.
Mm.
Are there any successful societies which have that sort of ethnic breakdown?
Mm.
Well, of course, we go back to Switzerland. Yes, it's rich. It also has some very, very interesting views. As I understand it, I've only read this once in a pamphlet I saw 25 years ago. And I've never heard it said since. But apparently, if you're a French speaker living in German-speaking Switzerland, don't expect anyone to be nice to you. Don't expect, you know, to be given a fair crack of the whip. You know, they all discriminate against you all day long. And same in the French-speaking area.
Against the Germans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Discrimination is absolutely, you know, part and parcel of this.
Mm.
Which makes you wonder what holds the whole thing together.
Mm.
And I guess perhaps it is because they're very rich and don't really want to become part of France or Germany.
Mm.
And never have been, of course. So that's part of it.
Switzerland is a very unusual place, isn't it?
Mm.
Very strange.
Yeah. It's also very nice. Well, as we were saying, it's a very rich country. Yeah.
Getting back to the Irish, when I was a kid and when I was first getting to know London, the typical experience I had of Irish people was of Irish beggars.
Oh, right.
So I'm somewhat unlike a lot of English people in that I had anti-Irish prejudice. Because the only Irish I met were scroungers. And there was one particular quality of the Irish scrounging classes that I especially detested. And that was when they would say, cheer up to you. And my answer was always, fuck off.
Yes.
There's nothing I really detest it. There are plenty of things I detest more, like being stabbed. But I hate it when people tell me to have fun. And I associate that with the Irish.
Okay.
And
I've never heard that.
Yeah.
I have never heard that.
I think we're talking Republics of Ireland people in London.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure.
You know, you used to see them on the underground and they would come in singing or playing a guitar or something and everyone would just fold their arms and look away, wait for them to go.
Wow.
Sometimes.
I mean, that's a really interesting generational thing, because I have never seen that.
Yeah.
And you're sort of 20 years older than me, so.
Well, how it's everybody.
Yeah.
But also, the Scots were doing it as well.
No.
Yeah. You would hear that word, Jimmy, meaning, I'm Scottish and you're another person. Hello. You know. And I thought, I'm not Jimmy. It provoked the worst possible reaction from me. But mostly it was this, cheer up.
Oh, goodness.
I really hate that.
Yes, yes.
But then I started realising that there were plenty of, as you say, you know, I started working and bumped into Irish people who were just as capable as anybody. And just as repressed and English, and they would never say, have some fun, cheer up or something like that.
No, I've never heard that. But I will maintain that the Irish are more friendly.
Mm.
Genuinely
friendly.
Yes.
There was always the feeling with these particular Irish people I detested that they were only saying cheer up because they knew it annoyed the English to be told this. Whereas that's not how it is when you go around Ireland, is it?
No, it's not.
They're genuinely friendly. It's their country.
Yeah.
They make the rules, and the rules are hello.
Why would that be? I presume it's something to do with it being so rural. Is Dublin any different? Don't know.
Rural areas often are famously scary for townies, though, aren't they?
Are they?
Yes.
All right. I mean, it can be if they freeze you out.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But that, yeah. It's like English speakers going to North Wales and...
Yeah.
The Welsh not actually refusing to speak English, that sort of thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
My family connection with Wales has grown because my sister and her husband went. They basically retired to West Wales, and they've learned to speak Welsh.
Yeah.
Now they're moving to Cornwall. I don't know what happens there.
I will continue to believe that Cornish is a myth,
and
we don't have to worry about it.
Yes.
But who knows? Who knows?
I do remember being greatly entertained when I had a job delivering things in a van, and I would drive into Cornwall, and a big sign would say "Welcome to Cornwall," and on the way back I'd see the back of the sign "Welcome to England," done by hand. nice touch.
Well, yes. I suppose we do have to consider that, as you were saying earlier, the empire did keep all this together for a long time.
Mm.
Why would that be? I guess it's opportunity.
Well, part of it was that the top nations had no qualms about proclaiming themselves just that.
Mm.
And if you didn't agree, well, you're ignorant.
It was also that England, for want of a better word, was the top nation.
Yeah.
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 Although it's interesting to observe that Irish nationalism achieved its ultimate, well, not past ultimate objective, but most of its objectives in 1922 at a time when the British Empire was bigger than it's ever been.
Mm.
So why was that? Maybe for some people, they already felt that the writing was on the wall.
Mm.
Maybe because, well, the British had got or the English had got an attack of morality and decided they had to treat people well. And
yes, I think having a war against Germans brings out the piety. You know, I mean, that's what stopped England being an anti-Semitic country. Having a war against Hitler, it became rather absurd for us to go on keeping Jews out of golf clubs. But we've been doing that until the Holocaust was revealed.
Yeah. Well, there's another period in English history where, what was it, was it 1199 or 1299?
Yeah.
Until Cromwell.
Mm.
When, no Jews in the country at all. They won't be chucked out.
Mm.
I mean, I could talk about an effective counter-terrorist policy, but I've sort of trumped that with my views on partition.
Mm.
And I think partition really is the answer. I know partition has got a bad name, bad reputation, but I think it's right enough.
Yes, I recently read that after the First World War, the idea of getting everybody into their ethnic enclaves was a good one, but it wasn't done. There were too many places where they didn't do this.
It was done after the Second World War, though.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. All those Germans getting chucked out of Poland.
Yeah.
And Czechoslovakia. Yeah. Yeah, you've still got a Hungarian minority in Romania.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, the Balkans carry on.
Mm. I'm trying to think what more questions I have about... I tell you, the one thing I haven't said in this is that the feeling of the Unionists... feeling like foreigners to me.
Because of the accent, because of the attitude.
The whole everything about them. The demeanour, yes, yeah. The accent, the attitude. Yeah. Who was that priest? I've forgotten it temporally.
Ian Paisley.
Yes, Ian Paisley. Yeah. He didn't sound English to me at all.
Well, you're fascinated to know that in the late 60s, my mother would sit me in front of the television and tell me to say bad man whenever Ian Paisley appeared.
Oh, really? Why did she say that?
Because she despised him. Because, my mother had sort of, you know, she's a bit had sort of slightly wishy washy views on all this, and to some extent was an Irish nationalist actually, which is true of a very very small number of Protestants. I think she despised the voice, the stridency.
I remember once upon a time in the 80s talking to a Scottish unionist. There were a great many of them in our circles at the time because they were...
Sorry, a Scottish unionist for Scotland being part of the Union or Ireland being part of the Union?
Scotland.
All right, okay.
But also Ireland. Yeah. I mean, they were unionists. Mm. And asking, why don't you try and put a better case to the English for unionism? Because they don't, as a general rule. And his answer was, well, there is no case.
Oh. Well, that's...
So we don't put it because there's... I once thought about how to do that, and I realised it was impossible.
Yeah. I was thinking about something you said once. You published this as an LA pamphlet about why Scottish independence would be a good thing.
Hmm. They wouldn't have the English to blame anymore.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
I still think that might be true.
Well, of course, we have the example of Ireland. How's that one worked out? Certainly, when I would be visiting there every year, this would be in the 70s, it was very obvious that Ireland was poorer than England.
Mm.
You could tell that in
cars.
Cars, to some extent... signposts, would you believe, which were rubbish.
Really?
The milk came in tetrahedrons, and they didn't have central heating. It was all fires, often burning turf.
But now it doesn't feel like that.
Last time I visited, I was shocked by how English it was.
That's interesting.
Really, really surprised by how English it was.
Mm.
It seemed that it was things like the police cars, the ambulances, the trains, the shops, the general attitude.
This is the Republic, is it?
The Republic of Ireland. It's yes. Dublin.
Mm.
Maybe Dublin is a more English place anyway because it's nearer England because it's an English... Well, it's actually founded by the Vikings, but...
Long history of connections between them.
Yeah.
The Messiah gets its premiere in Dublin, I think it was.
But even going back to Monaghan, I was surprised. Mm. It had been done up. It's got a fresh coat of paint all over the place.
Yes. Yes.
You know, the pub seemed very English to me.
Mm.
The supermarket, you know, what's not English about this place? Yeah. What's really quintessentially Irish or, you know, is there a sort of Irish flavour to anything that I can see? It's hard. It's hard to see.
Mm.
Yeah, the accent, of course, is different. That's not... You can't read much into that.
And you were very... There was never a feeling of your English sod off back to England.
No, but I was very... I wasn't saying a lot. Shall we say this?
Yes.
I'm always, you know, aware that that actually might feel could exist. Yes. I mean, for instance, I took a holiday there in 95. Was driving. I mean, this is a sort of circumnavigation of the whole island.
Mm.
And I did notice that I think I saw one Union Jack on the hotel. The hotels all had Irish flags, European flags, often French and German flags, but no Union Jacks.
Mm.
And that was quite a surprise to me at the time.
This leads us on to the whole business of the current arguments about the border because of Brexit.
Unfortunately, since the Good Friday Agreement, I have not taken any interest at all. I gave up at that point completely and utterly, stopped taking interest, and I have no idea what's going on. I occasionally look at the polls that you get at general elections, and clearly the Nationalists are doing a lot better in Ulster, well, than I would like, shall we say.
Mm.
And it implies there have been demographic changes, and it's getting closer and closer and closer.
Mm.
And according to the treaty, the 1998 treaty, if Northern Ireland ever votes to leave the United Kingdom, that's it.
Mm.
One vote and you're out.
Mm.
Which may or may not happen. So sorry, I can't comment on this latest thing. I understand that Ulster is still part of the EU customs union and there is effectively a border in the RSC. Is that correct?
It might be. My knowledge of it is even less than yours, I suspect, if you can imagine such a thing.
Right. Well,
I was hoping you could tell me a bit about this.
I'm afraid not. No.
No.
Yeah. Maybe I should have kept going. Who knows?
No. You do what you do.
Mm. I was going to try to say something about invasions and at what point you have to accept the invaders are here for good.
Mm.
Because that's what happened in Ulster. It was an invasion in 1600 onwards.
King Billy and all that.
My lot, probably, came over as part of a bit of private enterprise.
Mm.
Between two chaps, I think they were Montgomery and Hamilton, but I could be wrong on that, who settled a lot of people around Belfast, which is why it's such a Protestant town, and a few in Monaghan, apparently. But, you know, records, history may be difficult in that regard. But also we have the example of Israel, which has been solidly Israeli since 1948. And, of course, that is not accepted, even though it's like 70 years now. Is there a point when you have to accept it? Or maybe it's just a question that it's really a question of how many people are left? Is there any point in still fighting it out? I mean, certainly the Ulster Irish think was, for the most part, do not accept this invasion and want it reversed. And certainly the Palestinians, as we call them.
Oh, you're talking about the invasion by the Catholics into Ulster?
No, the invasion by Protestants.
They don't accept that it was an invasion, you mean?
They absolutely believe it's an invasion.
Hmm.
And they believe it must be reversed.
The Ulster Catholics?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The Ulster Irish, I prefer to call them.
A lot depends on whether you have another enemy that's even bigger, doesn't it?
I was going to say it's a numbers game. We talked about the Normans earlier because there just weren't enough Normans, so they integrated. I was going to mention Roman Britain.
Mm.
I mean, you know, Claudius invaded, took the place over, or England anyway, England, Wales.
Mm.
Boudica had her revolt, 50 years later?
Mm.
And to the best of my knowledge, that's it.
Mm.
There were no further rebellions after that point. Isn't that odd?
Mm.
Why would that be?
Could be there were and they were expunged.
Yes, or, you know, the records have not come down to us. That's possible.
Mm.
That's possible. Or is it possible that they felt, well, hang about, these Romans, you know, first of all, it is obviously a superior culture, so you better keep in with them.
Mm.
And B, well, you can join the Legion, you can become a citizen, you can...
The world is your oyster.
The world is your oyster.
Mm.
the same view that the Scotland had, the Scots had about the British Empire.
Yes.
Maybe that's the part of it.
Mm. And the only truly regrettable thing the Romans did was to leave.
Yes, yeah. And to the best of my knowledge, that was a disaster.
Mm.
I mean, I had a sort of slightly depressing thought about this, because I was coming to the conclusion that these disputes will carry on so long as someone has the desire to keep them carrying on.
Mm.
And we don't complain about the Anglo-Saxons invading. Well, not in London we don't, let's put it like that. They might still do in Wales and other parts of the country, maybe Cornwall.
They spent a long time complaining about the Norman yoke, didn't they?
Did they?
That was a big deal in the 17th century, I think.
Okay.
I think that phrase was used a lot.
I'm just thinking about what written sources would have been handed down from the 11th century.
Well, it was as much a concocted idea as it was a real one. Right. The Norman yoke was kind of made up afterwards, you know, based on realities, but it was an idea in its own right.
When did the Norman yoke end? I suppose a 100 Years' War, maybe?
Well, they were the same people ruling the country. They were just speaking a different language. I do think language is central to all this. You know, what I said about the Welsh language and asking about Gaelic. That's because I think what language really does divide people, potentially, almost more than anything else.
The counterexample of Yugoslavia,
where
they're speaking more or less the same language, as I understand it.
Mm. I didn't know that.
And also Ulster, frankly. Gerry Adams might give lip service to Irish, but I'm quite sure when the IRA get together, he and his mates are speaking English.
Yeah.
Because that's the language they're most comfortable in. Mm. No, I'm not quite sure I agree with that. I mean, obviously, you know, language is a tremendous divider.
Mm.
You can't understand what the other guy's saying. Yes, you.
Mm.
He could be saying nice things, he could be saying nasty things. So, grounds for suspicion, reasonable grounds for suspicion.
I also think Yugoslavia is depressing, because it illustrates how quickly these things can flare up.
Yeah.
I mean, there are lots of people who talk about, you know, we literally didn't think about the fact that our friends were something else. They were Croatians or something instead of Serbians. And then suddenly, we weren't speaking anymore. Suddenly.
Mm. Yeah.
That's depressing, isn't it?
I suppose when killing starts, people have to start thinking about who's going to defend me.
Yeah, and they start saying, okay, they're not likely to kill me, but they might.
Yes.
That's a pretty important...
And that completely changes
your... That's a big
attitude.
Statement,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It goes from, they're not going to touch us, they're mates of ours, to, well, I suppose they might.
Yeah. They just... Or it might not be the guy I know, but it might be one of his friends
who
takes against me. Yeah. And you've got to be careful about where in your town you walk.
Mm.
Because it might not be so friendly.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's pretty much exactly what happened in Ulster in 1969.
Mm.
You went from a situation...
Yes, I remember hearing stories about how Catholic kids would dance around firework shows and bonfires, which were all in honour of Protestant things. But they didn't care. It was just a nice night out.
I haven't heard that one. I have heard stories about Orange Order bands or giving their loaning their instruments to the Ancient Order of Hibernians, because why not?
Everyone likes a good tune.
Yeah, exactly.
But then all that suddenly stopped.
Yeah.
Do you remember being very attentive to that at the time? How old were you when those troubles?
Well, I was only three.
Oh, you were only three. So, I see. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's almost a different world.
Mm.
It's almost a different world.
Mm.
If I think about, you know, when you're about 5, 6, you start to be aware there's a world beyond, you know, your house and your family.
Mm.
And I would have been aware, I was aware of the Northern Ireland troubles. And, of course, I was also aware of my family in Monaghan. And they were just different worlds.
Mm.
They didn't seem to be connected at all,
mm.
despite Monaghan.
I think we haven't mentioned is the... I don't think it's coincidence that the peace, Northern Ireland peace process, as it's been called, broke out exactly when the Cold War had ended.
Yes.
And yes, I don't think that's coincidence.
No, I don't think we'll ever know the full facts on this.
Mm.
I think there was an article on Samosata, very early on in Samosata's days, about this and why it happened. And someone said, yeah, exactly as you said. IRA couldn't get the weaponry anymore.
Maybe, yes.
Although, to my the best of my knowledge, most of the IRA weaponry came through Libya.
Mm.
Now, was that because the Soviet Union felt we'd better not come directly from us? If we just, you know,
mm.
put some Gaddafi's way...
I think a lot of it is that once the USSR is cut out of the story, then the opponents of the IRA have less reason to hate them and fear them.
They do?
Yes, because the Russians aren't arming them.
Right.
Or even can be said to be arming
them. The impression I got was it was very much a sort of internal IRA
mm.
decision.
The other thing was that the Americans, Clinton, was the first American president, as I understand it, who was willing to say to Irish Catholics in America, we're not having it anymore. Stop sending guns to those Irish in Ireland. And that's actually where they got most of their guns from. It wasn't Russians, it was...
My belief, it was the Russians.
Ah.
That is my belief. That's Semtex, for instance.
Yeah.
I think they were using far more AK-47s than they were M-16s.
Mm.
Yes, they got some Browning sniper rifles.
Mm.
Which were highly effective.
What about money from the Americans?
The IRA, I think, were fairly good at getting money from their own people.
Yeah.
Extortion rackets, selling drugs.
Bank robberies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Well, let's just say that ending the Cold War made it a bit easier to have a peace process.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
Mm.
Although I despise that term, peace
process. I know, I'm calling it the peace process because I don't want to call it peace.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, see also apartheid.
Oh, God, that's a...
Can of worms.
That's, yeah, exactly, can of worms, yeah. Rabbit hole. Let's not go down that one. Okay. But, yeah, I get what you mean, yes. It was, you know, America, Britain wanted South Africa to be anti-communist until 1990. And then suddenly it didn't matter anymore, so... Mm.
Yeah,
any propping up was going to end. Then. That's true. I'm not sure I have anything more to say.
I was hoping I'd have more to ask.
Yeah.
But I've got to admit, I remain south of England suburbanite and indifferent. You know, far away country of which I know little.
You're not quite, because you understand a similar situation could develop.
Yeah.
In English towns.
Yeah. 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 Well, that would be a different country. That would be my country. I mean, I don't think the Irish are going to cause that to happen.
No, I don't.
I think it's very important.
It's a question of transferring the
lessons. Important thing about the Irish nationalists is that they're none of them going to say, right, we've got the whole of Ireland. Now what? Liverpool, Wales, west of Scotland, Glasgow.
Oh, they might go for Glasgow and Liverpool. Mm. Might do. Although it looks a bit ridiculous on a map, no, I think they would have their enough problems of their own.
Yes. I don't think it's very plausible.
No, not at the moment, certainly not.
But the fact that the Irish don't have any designs on governing Manchester or London is all part of why the people like me just don't really bother with it.
No, that's a very good point. I wish you did. But, yeah, no, it isn't. They're not a direct threat to you, so, yeah, who cares?
That's one of the most important things you can ask about any extremist, is if they got everything they wanted, what would it be? And the answer is not that different from what things are, from where I'm sitting.
Mm.
Bad luck if you live in Ulster, but and you don't want the IRA running your life, or the Republic running your life.
Yeah.
Not the same thing, are they? But
well, you might have a refugee problem. I think that's worth thinking about. There might be a low-level war in Ulster. That's possible. With the Irish having to take the role of the British Army. Similar problems. Although I'm not... Who's going to arm them? Can't see that happening. Yeah. I don't like to think about that, but... The Ulstermen are in a precarious situation. If anyone chooses to really push them. And with very few friends.
Bit like the whites in South Africa.
Yes. Yes.
Same sort of predicament.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a long silence. We're done, aren't we?
We are.
Yeah.